If I asked you to say, what's 99 times 101? You might be stuck. But if I say 100 times 100, 10,000, and you're off by less than 1%. And see, by quickly rounding, by quickly applying approximations, you're not going to get an exact answer, but you're going to get an answer that gets you in the ballpark. And then you understand, does the rest of the problem, does the rest of the story make sense? And then you know of the 15 places you could go deep, which area to go deep. So it allows you to go very deep in the right area instead of literally, as they say, boiling the ocean, trying to do everything. The combination of frameworks and properly applying estimation does allow people to solve problems much faster, waste less time, and appear to have a superpower.
You're listening to Author Hour, enlightening conversations about books with the authors who wrote them. I'm Charlie Hohn. Today's episode is with Jeff Kavanaugh, author of Consulting Essentials. How do you become a world-class consultant? This is the question on the minds of thousands of young consultants as they graduate from the classrooms of the world's top business schools to the offices of top consulting firms. Yet few of them have been formally trained on the concepts that elevate consultants to the top of their field. And that's where Jeff and his book come in. Drawing on his experience as a senior partner at a multi-billion dollar consulting firm and his experience as an adjunct professor at the University of Texas at Dallas MBA program, Jeff shares the tools of the trade for young professionals to quickly scale the consulting learning curve. In this episode, Jeff distills the lessons into the key skills that separate the best from the best. And now, here is our conversation with Jeff Kavanaugh.
Just a farm boy from Indiana, literally grew up on a farm, and there weren't lots of role models for this kind of work, for sports, for work, for religion, for anything else, but not for this. So wasn't really aware, went through engineering school, thought that was the path to go if you wanted to solve problems and be a good problem solver. It wasn't until out of school and industry where I started to understand there's this other path of consulting, of solving business problems, of looking at things a little bit differently, solving these grand challenges. And by that point, it was kind of too late to go back. And I decided, you know, if I can't go back the classic way, go to the right college, or at least in a college that has a lot of a business curriculum, and maybe go to the right strategy firm or consulting firm as a first job out of school, then maybe I can just pick this up along the way. I think when I was at a manufacturing services company, I was working with a former partner from Pete Marwick. That was the predecessor to KPMG. And to listen to him and describe what he did and how he did it and the way he thought and the way he solved problems and the way he worked with clients, even that word clients was a new word. It was fascinating. I think that was the moment that I was hooked. Said, this is what I want to do. I need to figure out what a consultant is and what a consulting partner is and work backward and figure that out. And so that was the moment for me.
So why were you hooked at that particular moment?
Because it's a way of solving business problems. It's a way of feeling like you're giving of yourself to something in a professional setting. In other words, you're serving someone else. It's a client. Doctors have patients. Business people, it's more of a client. And it was solving a hard problem. It was a mental challenge. You know, growing up playing sports, competition was a big deal. Well, this is like a competition. You're solving a challenging problem. You're doing it for a person, for, you know, a human being, a client. And the stakes are big. It's like you're playing in the playoffs, you know, if you're in sports. You know, it matters. It's not just a day-to-day operational matter. Operations are important, but still. And I think the combination of those factors, that it's for another person, the fact that the stakes were pretty high and it was mentally challenging, it just reached me on a personal level.
So some people struggle with really defining what consultants do. And I know it varies, but how do you define what you do day to day?
In a phrase, we make clients more competitive. We help them connect with their customers better, or we help them save money. And to do that, we solve problems. We help them solve problems. They're maybe having a challenge solving themselves. Maybe it's through a fresh perspective. Maybe we've seen it somewhere else, which is great to relate something you've seen over client A to client B. It's also to use a framework, you know, mental models that roughly like a model, and then you can apply them to a fresh situation and it gets you half the way there and you can then accelerate your problem solving. It's also being able to not just solve problems, but help people identify the right problems to solve. Much like a doctor, if you go to a doctor, they don't ask you what drugs you want or what's the answer. They'll say, well, tell me your symptoms, and they'll diagnose it. And I think that's the essence of being a good consultant, is being someone who can diagnose and being applying what has worked elsewhere in a fresh way and solve a specific problem and make impact, not just activity, but deliver a result.
Love it. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you wrote Consulting Essentials. What was your big goal with this book? Did you write it because you saw other consultants that you wanted to help that didn't know the basic principles of how to be a great consultant?
You know, it started off like that. One of the heads of my company said, would you mind training the non-consultants, the technical people, in some of these consulting skills? I started to do that and realized this is a much bigger item. There's a much bigger picture here. It's really any professional, anyone who wants to think better, communicate more effectively, and take, I'll call it the laws of physics as applies to structured thinking, and solve problems more effectively. And then it became more of a personal thing for me. You know, I wish I had this. I basically wrote this for a younger me. I wrote this for all the people who didn't go to the right school or who went to a school that maybe was very technical or was just not an elite business school, or someone who may not have had that relative or that teacher or that environment where they got exposed to this early on. So the 99% of the population out there that can benefit, either maybe late in high school, but certainly in graduate school, college, or as a junior professional. The funny thing is, though, I've looked at tens of thousands of resumes and interviewed many people over the years. I actually led our recruiting for campus recruiting for our firm in North America. And there are even lots of folks that are in industry. Maybe after several years, they're thinking about either career changes or how to accelerate. They're also good candidates for this, where structuring the thinking, being able to apply some of these tools that you normally see in a consulting firm into an industrial environment. That's why I did it. And in the end, my goal is to democratize, if you want to call it that, some of these consulting skills and learnability, helping people to actually through the art of learning or the act of learning, and get it out there in the world as much as possible. Because I think that society overall can benefit from being a little more fact-based and a little less maybe gut feel oriented, especially in these times. So that's the reason I wrote it.
Excellent. Jeff, who would you say of that group of professionals is going to be the most urgently motivated to read it? Is it consultants who've just taken on a new project with a big client? Is it consultants really starting out? I know if it's a broad category, but who would you say is going to benefit the most immediately from it?
I think students in graduate school who are trying to finish out their graduate degree, and this can be like a capstone or pulling a lot of things together. I also think that professionals who are not too many years out of college could benefit from it, because even if they do get some training on the job, this is something that's missing. In fact, I thought this was the case, not an hypothesis, it was. And so the University of Texas, we conducted a big survey, 10,000 employers, 3,000 students, and 500 career center leaders, and interviewed them on what skills they thought were most important, and also the proficiency that students had and readiness to thrive in the workplace. And while some of the skills were consistent on what the employers as well as the students thought were important, like critical thinking, professionalism, creativity, communications, it's amazing that the students had such a higher opinion of their abilities than the employers did. There's a significant gap. And so I was writing for that gap, basically. In fact, the University of Texas had asked me, they were seeing that the employers were telling them that their graduates were fantastic quantitatively, but they couldn't tell a story. They had a difficult time extracting the signal from the noise and being able to isolate the most important elements and communicate effectively. So they said, well, Jeff, would you develop a course for us on critical thinking? And that's where this really began, because then the critical thinking and creative thinking, different types of communication, leadership, data visualization, elements of automation and AI. These all came together as foundational skills that a professional, certainly consultant, needs. And that's, I think, the group that can benefit the most from this.
So walk me through what a typical graduate sounds like when they're trying to tell a story, and then tell me what a well-told story sounds like by a professional consultant, and have it obviously be the same story, but it just have that contrast, because like you said, you're solving the gap. I want to know how wide this gap really is.
All right, let's deal in two or three elements. One is just structured thinking. Here's what a graduate might say, or someone, they think deductively, they think that's a neat thing to do. It's Sherlock Holmes. It's very sequential. I saw a problem. I got information. I analyzed this and it led to that. I analyzed that. It led to the next thing. And that led me to this, dot, dot, dot. It goes on for about 10 minutes. And then this is the answer. If it's a presentation, you're on page 45 and a half. And hopefully the audience is still with you. There are lots of formatting inconsistencies. You've been distracted. You're not quite sure. So there's a lot of other things going on. A professional discussion or professional presentation would be, this is the context. This is the complexity, the complication. And this is the overarching question that emerged. Should we go into this market? Should we replace this equipment? Should we hire this group of people? So that question now has piqued your attention. You've established the context, you have a complicating factor, and you have something grabbing your attention. And then you answer that. You literally give the answer immediately. Yes, hire these four people. Yes, replace the equipment. No, don't buy that company. Then you support it with 3 to 5 mutually exclusive, collectively exhaustive sets of information or output. Because if any of those are challenged by your reader or you had faulty logic, you still have the others that support it. And then if you have another point, you go on and on and on. Any one of those is modular. If your reader happens to, your listener happens to leave the room 10 minutes into your discussion, they already have the main points. You set an hour's worth in 10 minutes. If they're intrigued, they'll go into more detail where needed. That is the essence of the difference.
Beautifully stated. This is not to diminish or even say they're the same, but I have to study how to tell stories and how to communicate through video, because I do a lot of video work. And on YouTube, the way you describe that, almost every great video that retains your attention is structured in the way that you talked about, having the hook, basically giving them upfront, like, here's what we're going to be discussing, here's how you're going to benefit, so to speak, followed by the 3 points, and then summarizing. So I loved how you put that. That's super professional, and very few graduate students, I can imagine, are nailing that. So in the book, you have an entire section on these foundational competencies, and you also have written communication, frameworks and estimation, productivity, and leadership. Of these foundational competencies, if you had to pick one, Jeff, what would you say is the most valuable?
It's like asking which of your children do you love the most, right?
I know. I know.
Let's just say that I won't use the word it depends, because that you shouldn't do that. They're important for different reasons. If you're simply trying to make an immediate improvement, I believe that frameworks and estimation, we all love Marvel and DC and the superheroes, right? We all love to be a superhero. Well, you know what? Frameworks and estimation literally put an S on your chest. They can help you appear to have superhuman powers. You don't need a calculator anymore.
They literally put an S on your chest.
Literally. What you do is you can look at any problem and immediately start to frame it. You can say, all right, this is like something else we've solved. So you can very quickly have an approach. You don't need to know all the information. You don't need to have, you know, go through hundreds and hundreds of pages. If you have a similar problem, you can quickly apply it. Now, that in itself isn't a revelation for many people, because they look at formulas and they look at frameworks, but the ability to know those and then also to create them, to modify something and to create it for your purposes, like take Porter's 5 Forces or take something in Lean Six Sigma and then change 2 things about it and apply it to your situation.
Yeah. So could you give an example just to kind of make this more concrete?
Sure. I'm a master black belt in Lean Six Sigma, which is an efficiency methodology. You know, it's about wringing out uncertainty and making things better. So I did that several years ago. Well, another client, shipping, large shipping company, one of the largest between US and Asia or China, they had an issue with setting up their new customer contracts because they had to, all kinds of contracts, all kinds of systems in place. And we literally got there after they had tried for a year and didn't work. And on the first day, they said, tell us the answer. And I thought we had 6 weeks and I bought us a couple of days at least. I looked at all the frameworks I'd used before. I said, this one from Lean Six Sigma and this engagement model, I think it can apply to this. So I literally created what I called the Customer Engagement Operations Reference Model and I was able to apply it. It was that and the Supply Chain Planning Model. I literally just changed a few things, but applied it to their situation. They were amazed, thinking, man, you have this. This is right what we need. And we were able to accelerate. That was an example of taking something that was an industry reference model, seeing that it was similar, even though it was a very different industry, changing four or five elements. And we now had something that was rigorous that this client could use and solve their problem much faster.
That is cool. And S is forming on my chest as we speak, just from hearing that example.
I do want to have a bookend to that. The estimation part is probably something that's even more relevant for day-to-day for people that might be hearing this. Because too often we're hung up on the exact number when at the beginning, it's good to get a broad sense of what's right or wrong, what's directionally correct. So for example, if I asked you to say what's 99 times 101, you might be stuck. But if I say 100 times 100, 10,000, and you're off by less than 1%. And see, by quickly rounding, by quickly applying approximations, you're not going to get an exact answer, but you're going to get an answer that gets you in the ballpark. And then you understand, does the rest of the problem, does the rest of the story make sense? And then you know of the 15 places you could go deep, which area to go deep. So it allows you to go very deep in the right area instead of literally, as they say, boiling the ocean, trying to do everything. The combination of frameworks and properly applying estimation does allow people to solve problems much faster, waste less time, and appear to have a superpower.
Author Hour is sponsored by Book in a Box. For anyone who has a great idea for a book, but doesn't have the time or patience to sit down and type it out, Book in a Box has created a new way to help you painlessly publish your book. Instead of sitting at a computer and typing for a year, hoping everything works out, Book in a Box takes you through a structured interview process that gets your ideas out of your head and into a book in just a few months. To learn more, head over to bookinabox.com and fill out the form at the bottom of the page. Don't let another year go by where you put off writing your book. So I don't know if I totally understand the estimation in regards to consulting. So could you give an example of that, a more concrete one?
Okay. Let's say that a client has a problem with profitability. The profitability is an issue, and they have many product lines. Rather than going into lots of detail and maybe trying to have 15 consultants work for 6 months to look at every single product they have, why not quickly estimate and round the revenue, the costs, be able to quickly get information back and say, you know, based upon this, these areas look like they're worth going into more deeply. So rather than have detailed analysis across 10 product lines, maybe there is a very quick veneer to show where there maybe two or three areas where there are probably issues because the numbers, maybe like the profit margin is lower in that area, or maybe their expenses in a certain area are higher. The point is you're not trying to be specifically accurate with your first pass. You're trying to narrow your field of view so you can get detailed on the one or two areas that matter the most. And you know what? The other aspect is you're creating a hypothesis saying, I declare this is the area we're going to go deep. And you know what? You could be wrong, but you were bold. You said that. And if you are wrong, then you go back. But chances are you've honed in on the generally correct area. That's an example of applying it as well.
Makes sense. Thanks for explaining that. So you have, again, the foundational competencies. You talk about the process of learning. You talk about becoming agile. Which of these core competencies do you feel leveled you up the most as a professional consultant?
The base of the pyramid is learnability. It's the learning to learn, the ability to learn, because it is the gift that keeps on giving. In a world that's awash with information, disruption, and moving faster, it is the only thing that guarantees that you can be flexible, update yourself, and continue to move forward. It also keeps you young. It keeps you a beginner's mindset, and you look at the world through fresh eyes. And I think learnability is the foundation for anything. And it also helps the other skills blossom, because to learn means you have some level of humility. You're approaching something as a beginner because you're learning new things. You went from being an expert in one area to maybe a novice in another. And you accept that. And you accept that you're having a bit of a learning curve. It also is a way that you're empathetic, because you're learning, you're thinking about others, and maybe you're emulating some experts, and you're finding a way to seek out the very best in the world at something, maybe the best books on a topic, the best publications. If you're lucky enough, fortunate enough to talk to some of the best practitioners. And it's just an amazing thing to see how much white space you can pull out of the process, from going from being a novice to having proficiency, to having mastery. Do not skip steps, because if you skip them, you will fall down that ladder pretty quickly at some point. But if you do remove the white space, it reminds me of that movie, The Matrix, when Neo sits down in that chair and he blinks and says, I know judo.
Kung fu.
I know kung fu. Yes. Nothing was skipped. But all those experiences, some of those experiences you must have yourself, some can be vicarious. Some you can learn through others. That's the whole notion of an apprentice model. And that's something that is pretty prevalent in consulting. Any professional service, like advertising, especially law, medicine, accounting. And I think you think about the practices, the tried and true ones, and you apply those. That to me is a bit of a challenge, but it's a rewarding one. How fast can you learn? Because as long as you're learning, you're growing. As long as you're growing, I think that the world's always in front of you.
You know, I've spoken with other successful consultants, and they've said pretty much the same thing. And you took it, I think, from an even better perspective, which is it helps you grow. It keeps you young. It keeps the world right in front of you. They also mentioned that by having that beginner's mindset and that you're learning, you also put the client at ease. Because from what I understand, a big error that a lot of beginner consultants, I should say, make is they come in thinking they're the expert and almost taking on this air that they know as much about the business as the people running it do. And nothing is more distancing and more harmful to them than making that mistake. Is that fair to say?
Very fair. And it is not limited to junior consultants. There are people, and I think if there is a bad underside to stereotypical consulting in the past, it's been that expert, you know, that would come in and say how smart they were and maybe thought they were smart and you paid them if they were experienced. But that's not the right way to do it. It absolutely is an attitude of service. And what's nice is it also reorients your life, or orients your life towards service to the client, to your family, to your company, to your society, and ultimately to the betterment of yourself. And I think that attitude of the other, you're on the same side of the desk as your client, trying to solve the problem, the challenge is on the other side of the desk. It isn't some negotiation. You're trying to solve the problem. You know, it's like Shakespeare said, the play's the thing, well, the engagement's the thing. It's that act of solving that grand challenge. And that's the essence of a professional service firm, is to find these problems worth solving and to be blunt, in areas that clients are willing to pay for, that are important enough to pay so that people can be well compensated, and that you're doing it in a way where it's a mutually reinforcing structure. Once you get the basics of compensation out of the way, senior people work with junior people because they expand their influence, extend their impact. Junior people work very hard because they're learning at the side of an experienced person, of someone who's an expert. And when it all comes together, it's a really amazing thing. Yeah, I think that especially a junior person coming in, it is a challenge, because just like you said, no one wants the arrogant know-it-all coming in, especially when you don't have that knowledge to back up. We also don't want the wallflower. I tell people, when you go in, the first thing you do in that first meeting, you may only have 1% of that meeting, one small slice of the pie, but you own that. It can be a report, it can be a calculation, it could be something, because everyone wants to know, why is that person here? What's their role? And you can absolutely make an impact, and you have to, because until you're, if you're not known for something, then people dismiss you as not being relevant, and that's kiss of death in consulting.
Now, you have other chapters in the book on productivity, how to be more productive, how to be a better leader in leadership, becoming agile, even analytics and data visualization, automation, even how to ace an interview. But instead of talking about some of those, I want to talk about some of the impacts that you've had teaching either students or consultants. How have you affected their careers? And what do you expect this book to do for people once it's been out for a few years?
Glad you brought that up, because ultimately that's the reason for doing it, is to hopefully make a positive impact on as many people as possible. One good example, and it's not just your classic, very technical, very quantitative computer coding consultant. But one good example is Libby, and she's given permission to use her name. Libby McFarlane. She was a Wellesley graduate, liberal arts. I say that because it's not the typical technology consultant profile you'd have coming in. She came in and I noticed that she was in a local office where we had this tech client we were growing. And I said, would you join our program? She said, well, they don't really have much of a technology background. I said, you know what? I welcome you. You've got a good base as long as you're willing to learn and work hard. I said, absolutely. And it was interesting because basically applied these concepts, the learnability, the communication, and the frameworks and modeling, quickly helped her learn, in this case, because of a lot of projects and budgeting, Excel, and the ability to frame numbers, and then moving into organizational change and how to work with stakeholders. She went from, to be honest, not having a lot of background with applicable skills, because at the time we didn't have a deep jumpstart program, to being extended many times, several times. And in fact, the client threw a party when she left. They were so excited, you know, so appreciative of her work. And I think it's a good example where by focusing on the right things and having a very non-defensive, totally open attitude towards learning, her natural skills just came out. And in fact, even today, we stay in contact, and she's one of the most successful MBAs. She went on and got her master's, and I see her with various awards and very, very proud of her.
Excellent. And how about the impact you're visualizing a few years from now?
Well, I'm hoping, well, first of all, that at least the people, like, for example, in my class, one of the reasons I also wrote this is because I just didn't like, frankly, the textbooks we had to work with for this particular area in the graduate schools that just weren't available. They were either too philosophical, like dusty logic, more philosophy, or they were just very tactical and very, very systems oriented, like data visualization. There wasn't this insights development. And so this will be what I use for the students. So I hope it helps them in a more concise way. I also hope that as this gets out in the market, that it becomes known as some niche, at least, as the definitive text for people who genuinely want to learn, and they want to have this toolkit of skills from learnability to these foundational competencies and a little bit of these more mastery ones, like you mentioned, visualization and design thinking and agile. And it's basically what I would tell my students if they were here. It's what I would tell my adult children. And so hopefully it's a way to have a discussion with them in an asynchronous, you know, decoupled way around the world.
I'm always grateful for authors like yourself, Jeff, who take a look at the books out there and say, nah, that's not good enough. And they just go out and do it. So thank you for making the book. Now let's kind of wrap up with a challenge you can give to listeners who are really, they're on this path. What would you suggest they can do from your book this week that could have a positive impact on their life or their career?
There are two things. One, take this concept of learnability to heart and challenge yourself to say, do I really know what I'm doing? And you can do this quietly, you know, with the mirror, because it can be somewhat humbling. Do you really know all the experts in your industry? Have you read the important books? Are they on your shelf or on your Kindle? Or do you understand the frameworks and know who the leaders are? If not, go do it. Very quickly, you will raise your game and you'll just feel it. And it's also will be a way to get that mental flywheel spinning and learn, being better at learning. Don't underestimate the impact of just doing that. Second, if you think about these two words, first of all, we talked about service. It reorients yourself, reorients to outside of yourself. The other aspect is critical thinking helps you appreciate the world around you. And that's the first step to being grateful for the world around you. And if you pair those words, grateful and service, have an attitude of grateful service, it is an amazing everything from being an antidepressant to be helping you be more relatable to other folks to being more empathetic. That's also very powerful. So grateful service and with a foundation of learnability, I think that will make an impact on anyone.
Man, I love that. Grateful service. I couldn't agree more, especially with the antidepressant part, because people who struggle with depression are often so focused on themselves and only taking care of themselves as an individual and not getting what they wanted and blah, 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 blah. And if you can just flip that around and just start focusing on helping the people around you, like you end up taking your care of yourself through that. And so I think that's phenomenal advice. So how can our listeners connect with you and follow you?
On Twitter, at Jeff Cav, at J-E-F-F-K-A-V. My firm, Infosys, we have Infosys Consulting Insights, a lot of good white papers and thought leadership there, if people would like that. And I think my own site, jeffcavanaugh.net, J-E-F-F-K-A-V-A-N-A-U-G-H.net. It's been a lot of the material that has come from the book. Obviously, the book is the culmination. What I hope to do is it become more of a dialogue, conversation, which continually gets updated. And of course, the best way to do that is on the site. So I'll be doing things with that and also developing a field guide, which will be very detailed worksheets and both for my university class as well as to put it out there for people in the future. So those are projects. So if people want to stop by and visit, I'd be happy to have them.
Fantastic. The book is Consulting Essentials. Jeff, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie, for having me.
Many thanks to Jeff Cavanaugh for being on the show. You can buy his book, Consulting Essentials, on Amazon.com. Thanks again for listening to Author Hour, enlightening conversations about books with the authors who wrote them. We'll see you next time.